Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gamet and Brian Chaffin.
Today is March 29th, 2010, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 166, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, Scallywag. Get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to question or comment on anything at all, at least regards the show. Actually, just we'll make that blanket. Anything at all. Shoot us a note.
Pew, 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 pew. Pew, 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 pew.
Thank you, Melissa. At ACM at macobserver.com.
I'm glad our gunshots are back.
Yeah, so am I. And speaking of being back, I'm back.
Yes, and welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. I had a great trip and great vacation, and it was fun podcasting from an Abilene parking lot.
That's right. You were in Texas in a parking lot on your iPhone.
On my vacation.
In the snow.
Podcasting. Boy, that's dedication right there.
That is, you really are a trooper.
I love our listeners.
And, you know, and I think they love you too.
I hope so.
Well, they understand how dedicated you are to the relationship.
Of course. Of course. Of course they do. Of course.
That's right.
And speaking of being dedicated, you know what I'd like to do on Wednesday? Let's do a sort of iPad prep show.
Man, you're like off the hook.
I am off the hook. The hook is over there, and I'm way over here. That's how off I am. Or is it touched? I'm touched. I might be getting my verbs mixed up.
Well, it depends on what kind of party you're at. All right, so Wednesday.
Actually,
that
may be a Southernism. Being touched means you're crazy.
You know, I'm from Missouri, and I know the whole touched thing.
Oh, okay, good. I forgot that you were from Missouri.
Sorry about your speech impediment.
So let's do that on Wednesday, and I'm on Twitter, TMO Brian. You're Jay Gamet, whatever. Let's do the show.
Man, give you a few days off and
I get all kinds of coggy.
Full of piss and vinegar.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Okay, what the hell, we'll do the show. Former Apple board member Jeremy York wasn't happy with Steve Jobs hiding his health issues, and Pwn to Own hacking contest winner Charlie Miller plans to share the Safari security flaws he found with the company. Random House is looking for better iPad book pricing, and Mac OS X just turned 9.
On March 18th, Apple board member Jeremy York passed away after suffering an aneurysm, something that Jeff and I talked about in the last show. A week after his passing, the Wall Street Journal published a story that quoted Mr. York as being, quote, disgusted, unquote, at the way Steve Jobs and Apple itself hid the severity of the health problems that led to Mr. Jobs taking a six-month medical leave of absence. And after that run-on sentence, I may need a medical leave of absence. He added that he almost resigned when he found out, and he even wished that he had. Now, the report added new fuel to the discussion about whether Apple was obligated its fiduciary responsibility to its shareholders by not fully disclosing the details of Mr. Jobs' health issues, and instead insisting that it was a private issue.
Is there like a fly in your office? 'Cause I was sure that's what I heard.
No, that was me doing an apostrophe S after the fact.
Okay. Security research specialist Charlie Miller isn't planning on sharing the exploits he found in Apple's Safari web browser to hack a MacBook in the CanSec West Pwn to Own contest this past week. Instead, he plans to share his techniques with the company so they can improve product security on their own. Mr. Miller used a technique called fuzzing to look for potential flaws in applications ahead of the event and uncovered several in Safari, along with some in Adobe and Microsoft applications, too. He said, quote, "I'm one guy working out of my house. I shouldn't be able to find bugs like these ever," unquote. The eloquently named Tipping Point Zero-Day Initiative will handle getting the data to Apple, Adobe, and Microsoft so end users won't have to worry about script kiddies trying to take advantage of Mr. Miller's work.
Random House, one of the world's largest publishing houses, is reportedly balking at a deal with Apple for distribution on the iPad and Apple's iBook store for fear of a price war. The Financial Times of London reported that Random CEO Marcus Dole, who shouldn't be confused with a Random CEO, say former McDonald's CEO Jim Cantalupo, or even current CEO of Marzulli and Sons Plumbing and Heating Company of Philadelphia, Vincent Marzulli, told the newspaper that the business model being offered by Apple represented change and that the company needed additional time to consult with both shareholders and authors. That gag brought to you courtesy of Google.
I really missed you.
Thank you, buddy.
All right. I'll see if we can get through the rest of this now.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you, Mac OS X. Happy birthday to you. Okay.
Hey. Yay! Happy birthday, Mac OS X. It was 9 years ago on March 24th that Apple first released Mac OS X 10.0 to great fanfare. Well, at least within the Mac community. And all these years later, we're at version 10.6.3, at least as of this recording, and it's never been a better time to be a Mac user.
That sound means it's time for the Context Machine, and that's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on, so we get that whole Context Machine within the Context Machine thing.
It's how we make our sausage.
It is how we make our sausage. So let's see. Why don't we start with Mr. York being disgusted?
Speaking of sausage, how do you think of that? You know, considering what we know about Mr. York, I guess I'm not really surprised that he was really disappointed with the way Steve Jobs' health was information was handled, and the whole thing with him not quitting, even though he wanted to. I liked what you were thinking about that.
What was I thinking? I'm sure it was brilliant. But it was.
You were thinking he chose not to leave because it would create an even bigger spectacle out of the whole situation.
I don't think I said that.
I thought you did.
No, that's kind of what he said.
Okay. Well, you know what? I'm going to credit you with that because I can.
Fair enough. You know, there were a lot of people that sort of, you know, I don't know. The comments on this article were kind of mixed because some people were attacking Mr. York and other people were defending him. The reality is if you're going to have someone like Jeremy York saying something like this, you should pay attention. And I sort of guess that at some point the SEC may have something to say about this.
That would be interesting to see if they do.
You know, and I was always a little bit iffy on the whole notion of Steve Jobs' health being a private issue. I really respect him wanting it to be a private issue.
Oh, sure.
I even respect sort of him thinking. No, I don't really actually respect that. Of him thinking it should be a private issue. I mean, the reality is that whenever you have a CEO who is greatly tied in to the fortunes and well-being of his company, an issue that could affect his job performance or even whether or not he can do the job at all, almost always is the business of the shareholders.
Yeah, you know what? This is a tough one for Steve Jobs, because he is in a position where he's a very private person, and his personal health issues ought to be able to be personal. And I know for me, if I have health issues, I don't expect that I need to run articles or do interviews so that other people can run articles about my current state of health.
Right, but you're also not the CEO of a multi-billion dollar a year company with a market capitalization of in the hundreds of billions.
Right, and you pointed out, and this time I'm sure it was you, when we were talking
before
the show. Yay you! That the whole performance of Apple right now is directly tied to Steve Jobs.
Well, it's greatly tied. I've got to put a little bit of wiggle room for Apple on this. Apple definitely showed that the company could operate without Steve. During the absence itself. But I think there's a difference between operating, because clearly Tim Cook is just a fantastic operator. But there is a difference between operating and continuing to innovate in the years ahead. And I think that Apple will be okay for a long time when Steve Jobs decides to leave. And, you know, hopefully that'll be, of course, when he decides to leave.
Right.
Not
the way, unfortunately, that Jeremy York had to leave.
Correct. I'm sure that the company can do well, but it won't be. I don't care how well Apple operates. It won't be the same Apple. And if it's not the same Apple, then it's going to have a different shareholder value, for good or for ill. I mean, the company could become a lot better without Steve. Yeah, that's always possible.
Sure.
But then again, shareholder value will reflect that. So, I mean, I think that those outsiders who were claiming that Apple should have disclosed this to its shareholders, I think that they are right. And I think that Mr. York was probably quite heartfelt when he said that. I mean, I wasn't there at the interview that he gave with the journal. Of course, none of us are. This was a posthumous story. We don't know the circumstances of the comments. We don't know if they're taken out of context. There's a lot of things that we don't know and may not ever know about this. But I guess I'm going to come back around to one of my first points, that if someone with the track record of Mr. York, with the experience of Mr. York, says that he was disgusted over the issue and that he should have resigned, that he wished he had resigned, then the rest of us need to stop defending Apple on this and actually pay attention.
Yeah, that's a pretty big statement coming from him.
It is. You know, there's another thing, Jeff. There's another thing. The board went along with Mr. Jobs concealing the severity of his health issues, and the board also saying that it was a private issue, may well suggest that he has too much control over his board. Because I think in this case, the board should have said that one of the jobs of the board is to check what the CEO does. And I think in this case, the board should have said, what do you mean it's a private issue? Are you kidding? We've got to tell the shareholders.
You know, that brings up something that I've been kind of mulling over since this information or this interview with Mr. York came out, was if the board is willing to go along with the whole let's keep it under the rug thing. But Jeremy York is saying, no, I'm disgusted. This is how it happened. Is there a chance that he was acting in some form or another as if he was the conscience of the board? And when people were saying, hey, let's do whatever, and it was something that might be construed inappropriately or might be flat out wrong to do, and he was saying, no, we can't do that. Is that something we're going to have to be worried about now that he's gone?
Well, it's a good question, and one, of course, we don't know the answer to. We can only speculate on my guess, and I have zero evidence of this. I want to stress the fact that this – I mean, I'm just like, pulling I'm not even pulling this out of my rear end. I'm pulling this out of the dude that's walking down the street's rear end or something. That's just a weird metaphor. Anyway.
Yes. But that's okay. Let's run with it.
I would guess that most, if not all, of the board had at least second thoughts. So, okay. I don't know that Mr. York has to be the conscience of the board in this particular conscience of the board in this particular case. I just think that I'm guessing. In fact, we talked about this. He probably gave this interview for posterity's sake, just saying you can't publish anything about this as long as I'm serving on the board.
Right, and since he's no longer serving on the board, well, there you go.
Right.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see if over time we start having other weird kind of incidents cropping up where people are saying, you know, maybe the board should have acted differently.
Right.
All right. So,
because right now everything's going swimmingly at Apple.
Right.
Fantastic. Right. So, you know, there's not a whole lot of second guessing going on. But keep in mind, another subject of this Wall Street Journal article that was covering this to begin with is the fact that Apple has one of the smallest boards of any Fortune 500 company. And the subtext of that aspect of the story being that the company needs to at least replace Mr. York, if not replace him and Google CEO Eric Schmidt, who left in 2009.
Right, they haven't replaced him.
They haven't replaced him at all. And they said at the time that they had enough members to actually focus on the three committees that oversee Apple's operations. And now that they're going to have to replace Mr. York, because for one thing, Apple's bylaws require that the audit committee be comprised of three people with finance or accounting backgrounds, and Mr. York was that third member.
All right, so now they're bound to have to replace one person.
Yeah, they're going to replace him. I would guess, if you think about it, if you're Steve Jobs and, you've got the sort of influence you have over your board, you, of course, always want to keep it as small as you can get away with, because they're easier to control that way. And I'm not saying I'm not trying to say that Apple controls his board. My original point on that was whether or not he had undue influence. But the point being that, the people that are there are fiercely loyal to him. And, the fewer people you have, the easier it is to maintain that sort of relationship.
Very true. Okay, I'm going to toss something out here and preface it with, I don't think this is really what's going on, but it's kind of interesting to think about. What if the board actually told Steve, no, you cannot talk about your health issues because it will adversely impact the stock value?
They would be subject to all kinds of criminal prosecution.
Of course they would. But wouldn't it be just a real interesting twist of events if it turned out that the board was manipulating Steve instead of Steve manipulating
the
board?
All right, so let me just run with that.
Okay.
Steve Jobs, he's like, dudes, no, man, no, I gotta tell people. They might have to replace my liver, dude. All right, man, I've got to tell the shareholders because they've got a right to know. And the board's over there like, no, dude, man, you can't do that, man, because, because people are going to freak out and stuff. So and Steve is like, no, man, it's my job. I owe it to the people, man. It ain't happening.
Of course it's not happening. But someone somewhere is now going to write a fan fiction piece where it does happen.
I do not want to read any Apple fanfic. I do not want to read about Steve Jobs and Johnny Ive, man. No, thank you.
Stop. Oh, that's
no,
not right.
Sir. And if you don't know what fanfic is, congratulations.
Yeah, and don't Google it. I mean, if you don't know, just leave it alone.
Alrighty, let's just leave this alone. Let's run away from that as fast as we can.
I think that sounds like an excellent plan.
You want to talk about Random House?
No. No, that's okay. Let's talk about Random House.
All right. Well, first of all, I have to point out that the webpage for Marzulli and Sons Plumbing and Heating Company from Philadelphia, the bottom right hand corner, it's got a link for site manager sign in.
So, you know what? Send me the URL for that website, and I'll put it in the show notes.
I will do. I'm doing that right now. You might hear me clicking. So I'm doing that right now.
That's okay. It adds a sense of realism to our show.
Yes, there was a lot of drama with the company in the 50s and 60s. By the way, when they decided to downsize.
I know. I have to stop laughing. I'm just encouraging you.
Okay. So, Random House, big, huge company. I think that they're the largest publishing house in the world in terms of sales, which means that there's likely a company that actually maybe moves more units but has lower sales.
Okay.
So they're certainly one of the biggest players, if not the biggest player in the industry. The industry, of course, that Apple is courting very heavily for the iPad.
Right.
And Apple has five of its competitors, including the biggest independent, the biggest so-called independent company. They're actually a really huge company.
Okay, so by volume, all of these other companies are probably selling more than Random House.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But Random House still represents a significant chunk of the you know, catalog of books that are being published.
Right. Yeah, and they have a lot of big name authors.
Right. And they are signed on to Amazon, and Amazon does that whole Walmart price model of doing everything it can to force people to sell for the lowest price possible.
Right.
So they're not signing on to the iPad for fear of a price war, where on the iPad, the publishers can set their own prices. And on the Kindle, there are strict limitations that Amazon imposes in order to get the same percentages, actually less percentage than what Apple offers.
Okay, so this is going to be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out with Random House, because Macmillan has already pulled their little game, or played through their little game, where they've been able to switch the pricing model for their titles, and Amazon lost.
Right.
So if Random House wants to do the same thing, Amazon has already lost, which means that prices for their books at Amazon would go up, and then the whole price war thing would be over because they'd be the same at the iBook store and Amazon.
Back up, Jeff, because Random House is already on the Amazon Kindle. It's Apple that they're not signing up with.
Right.
But Apple's model offers the most chance of a price war not happening.
Right.
So, I mean, like I said, they're already on Amazon, so I think that's pretty much a done deal.
Right, but Macmillan was already on Amazon, and they're signing on with Apple.
Right.
And when they did, they switched to their what they call it, the agent model? Something like that. And which then meant that prices at Amazon had to go up.
Right. And I guess I'm kind of calling BS on this whole notion that they're not signing up for iBooks for fear of a price war, because there's just no logic behind that argument. And I think instead we either have the proverbial finger in the dike, or we have a company that's trying to put itself in a position to negotiate a better deal with Apple.
Well, of course, Random House is going to try and negotiate a better deal, because but that's what companies do.
Apple will never give it to them, ever.
If they don't try, you always work to the no.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. But Apple cannot possibly afford to give anyone a different deal from anyone else.
And they won't. Unless they're doing something really weird in the music end that they've been able to keep completely quiet, and that just doesn't happen, especially when you deal with people in the music or in the movie industry. You can't keep stuff quiet.
And what Jeff is referring to the fact that the deal being offered to publishers is the same deal, pretty much, that has long been the deal with the labels, with the exception of the labels can't price their own products and the publishers can. And it's also the same deal with developers who get the same percentage but also can price their own products.
Right. And then you also have the whole TV and movie thing where the companies, to a degree, can price their own products, but then they have whatever deal Apple gives them, and that's it.
Right.
So one book company, in the grand scheme of things, even though it's as big as Random House, is not likely going to be able to convince Apple to change up the way their deals work just for them when they haven't changed it up for anyone else.
No, I don't think so. And, you know, Apple let Universal go away.
Yeah, they did.
I think they'll let Random House stay away until Random House realizes it. Now, one of the things I said in that article when I wrote that up was that, you know, whatever kind of fight we have going on could well, you know, sort of lie with who needs who the most. And in this case, if the iPad is a, if I'm sorry, if the iBooks store is a big success, Random House is likely going to be the one that has to cave.
Right. And if it's not a big success, well,
who cares?
Yeah. Then
it won't be a big deal.
Yeah, it won't be a big deal. Now, my guess is that the iPad will be a big enough success that eventually Random House will sign a deal. Assuming they don't sign one in time for this Saturday's iPad launch.
Right.
And that just seems totally reasonable. I mean, in the music industry, the big labels all signed on, even if they left and came back. And then in the TV and movie side of things, okay, so they all sign up, and it is what it is. If you want to hit the broadest potential customer base, you need to make sure that your products are everywhere they possibly can be, and you want to make sure they're in the place that has the highest likelihood of selling them, which is why you see everything in Walmart.
Right.
So someone's going to send me an email because I just, in a manner of speaking, compared Apple to Walmart.
Ooh.
I look forward to your emails.
Right. So it's going to be, it's not really going to be that interesting in battle. I predict that Random House will take Apple's deal and that they will be on, if not for the launch, shortly thereafter.
Right.
That would be my guess. That's my prognostication.
I think you're spot on. And what I find to be really interesting about this is actually that Random House thinks that they can do something that no one else has been able to do, which is talk Apple into a different deal.
Right.
And that's okay. They're new to this game.
Right.
And everyone learns.
And they just don't know it.
Yeah.
They think that Apple's new to their game, but they're new to Apple's game.
Right. And that's a big advantage for Apple because this is their game.
Right.
And Random House will learn that.
Righto. Let's talk about our sponsor, the good folks at Citrix.
Oh, right.
Go to Assist Express.
Which is a very cool product because
it is a cool product.
Yeah. So if you're not familiar with GoTo Assist Express, this is a really cool service that lets you remotely control someone else's computer, and it's done in a secure way and in a very easy way. So you know, like let's say if you need to work on your mom's computer and she's in another state, instead of having her go through and make changes in her firewall settings and stuff, all she has to do is click on a link in an email that she gets sent, and it initiates a one-time secure connection so that you can get into her computer and fix things for her.
Right, but she has to okay it too, right?
Absolutely.
So I actually have some friends that during my travels that I was staying with that I plan on using this to do some work for them once they actually get a time machine.
Oh, very slick. And the nice thing is you won't actually have to spend the money to travel back out to where they are to
exactly.
help them.
Exactly. Exactly. It's perfect. It's perfect. And if my little sister didn't take care of my mom's computer, I would absolutely use ours.
Hooray for your little sister!
So one of some of the strong points about GoToExpress, you can definitely resolve issues faster because you don't have to. There's no travel time. You can reduce your travel costs again because there's no travel, and you know, at least according to them, you can increase your customer satisfaction, which is always a good thing. And so you know, there are a lot of business uses for this too that are outside of this. You know, we talk a lot about basically supporting our friends, but when it comes to, you know, businesses that are using Macs, this, you know, it can be a great way of being able to manage problems and find solutions fast.
Oh, sure. What a great way to be able to help out your clients. You know, you're sitting in your office and they say, I have this problem, and instead of telling them I'm booked up till next Thursday, you can say, okay, hold on, take your hands off the keyboard. Okay, great. Watch what I'm doing. It's fixed.
Right. So we would like you to try GoToExpress.
For
free. GoToAssist Express. Sorry about that. Free for 30 days. And if you go to the following URL, which we're going to announce with great dignity and aplomb, GoToAssist.com/machine. Do you get that?
That's very clever. Almost as if it was an Apple context machine, yeah.
Exactly. It's a special URL. We want you to go there, and you can try it for 30 days for free.
And we'll have a link to that in the show notes, too, for you.
Yeah. So it's GoToAssist.com/machine. And by going there, you let them know that we sent you. And we would have really appreciated it if you did that.
Yes, we would.
I think that, you know, Charlie Miller is kind of in a weird situation.
Now, I'm stopping you right now.
Okay.
Only so I can say, the way your brain comes up with the segues,
mysterious things at times.
It is. And I don't want to figure it out because I don't want to break that magical spell that goes along with, how the hell did we just get here?
I have an associative memory. That's the way my mind works. So I see one thing, I think of another.
And I'm okay with that. It's just I had to stop and point that out.
All right, fair enough. So Charlie Miller is it seems like, Jeff and I were talking about this before we started recording. It seems like he's getting a little pissy.
Yeah. Well, you know, consider what he does for a living, and I mean, he deals with security things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I'm probably going to end up getting emails for saying this. Maybe he just doesn't have the same social skills other people have, or maybe his patience have just worn thin.
I haven't met him.
Yeah, okay. To be fair, neither of us have ever met Charlie Miller.
Right, and he's probably the nicest guy in the world.
He
seems like he's getting a little pissy about the fact that Apple is so difficult to work with on these security things. I don't blame him for getting frustrated about it, because what happens is that guys like Charlie Miller or other people let Apple know about security flaws, and then Apple basically doesn't acknowledge it, say anything to them, or do anything about it until they get good and ready.
True.
And for these guys who think that this stuff is so important, and it is important, that's really frustrating for them. And this is actually something I think that Microsoft, believe it or not, has become a lot better than Apple about. I think they do a lot better job of communicating on these issues and actually working with these security researchers.
You know, I'm going to back you up on that completely. I have found, by and large, that my success rate with speaking with people at Microsoft is substantially higher and always a much more pleasant experience than trying to speak with people at Apple about things.
Of course, keep in mind, though, that, you know, the PR folks are different from the teams that deal with the security issues.
Okay, that's very true. And I've never actually had to deal with any of the security-related people at Microsoft. But, you know, going through the PR people that they have and then being put in direct contact with the person that's in charge of whatever it is I'm asking about, that happens all the time at Microsoft.
Sure. And they do. Microsoft is better at communicating than Apple in all ways anyway. But the point is that at one time, Microsoft didn't take security very important, and that's one reason why Windows was such a mess when it comes to, you know, things like viruses and Trojans and everything. And I think that Microsoft is doing a really good job of that today, at least compared to the past. Now, I think that Apple does a pretty good job of dealing with its security issues, but it does so in a very closed and controlled way that leaves the white hats like Charlie Miller frustrated. And I understand that. But at the same time, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the first time you cry about something, I understand. The second time, yeah, it really does suck. But, you know, like the fifth time, sixth time, like, yeah, dude, we know. They're terrible about it. So why do you still look for the flaws?
And that's a good question. And in his case, I would assume it's because he really likes finding these things, not in a malicious way, but likes finding these things so that they can be fixed.
Right.
And my guess is that many of the companies that he deals with, because this is also what he does for a living, from right. what I understand, he is a technical security analyst.
Right.
So my guess is that the other companies he deals with are far more receptive, at least openly receptive,
yeah, it could be.
To what he's doing. And with Apple, they might be very receptive, but you wouldn't know because they don't tell you.
Right. And, you know, just today, macOS 10.6.3 came out and includes 69 security fixes, which is a lot.
That is a lot.
Right. Like I said, I think that Apple does a pretty good job of dealing with these security issues. It's just it doesn't do a good job of communicating with these outside guys. And by the outside guys, I kind of mean all of us, because, you know, a lot of these things that get announced by these security researchers are things that Apple should probably say, aha, yeah, we're going to fix that.
Yeah. Even just a basic acknowledgement saying, yep, got it. It's on the list now.
Right.
And then if they go no farther, that would probably still placate most of the people that complain about giving Apple information and then never getting feedback.
Right. It might.
Yeah. Well, there's still people that are going to complain saying, okay, I expected an open dialogue. I thought I was going to get to go to their offices and help them work through this. And maybe they'd buy me a burrito.
Right. And of course, that's not going to happen.
No, that's not going to happen.
But now here's where I completely agree with Charlie Miller. His quote, I'm one guy working out of my house. I shouldn't be able to find bugs like these ever. He's right. Because if he can do it, why can't the folks that work for Apple do the same thing that he's doing? Which, of course, is why he said he would share his techniques, but he's no longer just going to, you know, point out these security flaws for nothing.
Sure.
That was his point.
Okay. Now, to be fair, he also found security flaws in Adobe applications and Microsoft applications using this same technique.
Right. So same thing for them. Why is it that these white hat guys are able to find this stuff all the time? Because you have to realize that if the white hat guys are finding it, that means some of the black hat guys are too.
Right. And in this case, with the flaws that Charlie Miller found in Apple's applications, maybe it's just he found them before the bad guys. And so we're lucky in that sense.
Well,
but
yeah,
who's to say next time it won't be the black hat bad guys that find the stuff first?
Right. Right. And I think this is something that I think that security is something that a lot all these computer companies are better about, but I think there's still room for improvement. You know, and I realize that I'm sitting here saying this from my office chair. You know, I can't even do what Charlie does, let alone what Apple does.
Now, wait, Brian. To be fair, that is your throne of judgment.
It is my throne of judgment, and I even have pants on today. So, I mean, you know, my point is that I'm well aware that, you know, I'm just a dude that's, you know, sitting here, you know, yakety yakety yak. Here's my opinion. Blah 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 blah. But I think that when everything is said and done, is that as we go forward, especially if political tensions continue to heat up between, say, China and the U.S. or the China and U.S. corporations, that the issue of computer security is once again going to be important, like it was 8 to 10 years ago when it seemed like every other week billions of dollars of productivity were being leached out of corporate networks that were being knocked offline by viruses and Trojans.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, industrial espionage can be a big problem.
Yeah, I've no doubt. You know, there are millions, if not tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, of compromised Windows machines out there that send spam for the spam lords every day, every minute, every day. And I've no doubt that foreign governments of many varieties also control a lot of these Windows boxes. And, and I don't think that's the case for our Macs, at least not yet, but it could become the case.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, just because Macs aren't used as spam bots or denial of service attack machines or whatever is happening on Windows machines today doesn't mean that can't happen on the Mac at some point.
It could. I mean, it could at some point. And for that reason, I personally would like to see Apple work more closely with at least some of the people that are in the white hat field.
Yeah, that's
my outside perspective. And maybe Apple does more than I think, or maybe the white hat guys are nowhere near as cool as they think, and maybe even Apple's ahead of them a lot of the times. We don't actually know.
Yeah, okay, and that goes right back to exactly what we were talking about a few minutes ago, which is Apple doesn't communicate very well.
Right, and on the subject of security, I think it's something that they should communicate about better.
They should. Now, I'm sure part of the reason behind not talking about security issues openly is because that could also be construed as an admission that they have security issues with their software.
Right, and that could be. Yeah. That could be. It's all about control with Apple, always.
Oh, yeah. Well, Apple very tightly controls the message that goes out, and they do it really, really well. And the unfortunate side effect of that incredible control and prowess at delivering a message means that there are many people that don't get information that they feel they should have.
Right, and whether or not they should actually get it is another issue. Now, before we beat that dead horse anymore, let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Where were you on March 24th, 2001?
Let's see. March 24th, 2001, I would have been at either an Apple store or at it might have been Circuit City or CompUSA back then.
Definitely wasn't an Apple store.
Because the Apple store wasn't out yet.
At that time, Apple was busily using CompUSA to learn how to do the retail thing.
That's right. So it was probably CompUSA that I was at on that day.
Do you remember the event much?
I remember standing around talking with people.
Yeah, I remember. I remember it actually there actually being fewer people there than when the public beta was released.
And see, when the public beta was released, I wasn't actually at any specific location. That was back in the days this will kind of date me. Back when I was a consultant and part of the Apple Consultant Network. Back then it might have been Aspen or something else, but anyhow. So I picked up my beta software from one of the meetings that Apple had for consultants. So I didn't get to go to one of the beta launch things. And I should have,
I went to both, although I think I may have been late for the release date. But I was there when the beta was released, and it was pretty fun. It was a local CompUSA in Austin, and the cat that was working the store that I went to was a really good, he was one of the third party Apple employees.
Oh, right.
So he technically worked for Apple, but he actually technically worked for the third party firm that was managing that whole thing.
Yeah, I remember that. That was, they did some weird stuff with the way they had staff for those things back in those days.
Yes, they did weird things. He however was a great employee, and I remember being so excited about macOS 10 and its release, and also remember being very, very tense that I paid for public beta and didn't get really any kind of a discount on macOS 10 itself. Do you remember that?
Oh, I forgot about that.
They had said that they even told us basically that there was going to be some kind of a discount, and then they didn't actually give us one.
That's kind of sucky.
Yeah, it was kind of annoying. Doesn't really matter now, of course, but so it's interesting now. So the fact that macOS 10 has been out for 9 years.
Now, how much did macOS 10 cost when it came out? Do you remember? Was it $129?
The beta was $29.99.
Yeah, but when 10.0 shipped,
I believe it was $129.
So Apple's been charging the same price for their operating system for a decade.
Right, and it's always been substantially less than, say, Windows.
Yeah.
I'm Googling right now to see what the price was of macOS 10.0.
I'm just looking Mac Tracker.
Cheetah was... Wikipedia's got the price for the public beta, but not for Cheetah itself. Were you looking at the place you were talking about?
Let's see. Okay, so Mac Tracker, which is a kick-ass application. All right. So, let's see. $129.
$129, yeah. I just found it, too. Yeah, and so we were supposed to get some kind of discount, but we didn't. It was really annoying. I felt like I'd paid to be a guinea pig. I got over it.
Because you did.
I did, yeah. I did it, and I was, and I got over it. It's hard to believe, though. Not really hard to believe, but it's interesting to think that it's been 9 years. I mean, the March 2001 was, of course, you know, before 9/11, which was a game changing day for much of the world, if not most of the world, and we've gone through a lot of changes. We've gone from a PowerPC to Intel. We've gone to multi-core processors and more RAM than you can shake a stick at, and now we've got solid state drives and macOS, it's a good operating system.
It is, and it's proven to be very versatile because Apple's been able to retool it for Apple TV and for the iPhone and iPod Touch and now the iPad. And it keeps growing and kind of morphing into this thing that we didn't anticipate it would be before. I mean, who would have thought at some point you could have something that's about the size of a deck of cards in your pocket that runs macOS 10?
Right. We certainly couldn't think of it then.
No. And of course, we have that now because that's the foundation for iPhone OS.
Good times. Well, a big happy birthday to macOS 10. Thanks to the great folks at Apple spent 9 years making an operating system so that, we can podcast.
Right.
And surf.
Yeah, life rocks.
And, occasionally issue judgments from the throne of judgment.
Because that's part of what we do. That's how we roll.
It is. It's how we roll.
And I'm going to include a link to Mac Tracker in the show notes.
That's a good idea.
For two things. First, because I mentioned it. And then second, because apparently you don't have it. And so you can just go to the show notes and get the link.
Fair enough. That's a good point. We'll also include, of course, a link to our sponsor.
We will. And that would be Citrix. And go to assist.com. There we go.
/machine.
I'm glad you remembered all of it.
I did. I'm Johnny on the spot.
I'm glad you're on top of stuff like that because I can remember stuff like Mac Tracker. And you can remember the URLs for our
make a great team, you and I, Jeff. We make a great team. It's true.
That's right. Apple Context Machine.
You should see the very showy things I'm doing.
I was visualizing the hands sweeping in the air.
They were sweeping and swooping. It was glorious and grand.
I think what I visualized in my head may very well be exactly what you did.
Alrighty, let's hit it.
You know, and for a second there I thought, crap, we're just starting the show? All right. So on that note, if you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's at twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. That's all for this week.
And don't forget our Foley specialist.
Yes, our special contributing Foley artist would be Melissa.
That's right. As always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
See a way out now. I will not go, no matter.